Welcome, everyone. This is Mia Ferraletto, publisher of New Observations magazine. Welcome to the New Observations podcast. Before we begin, I would just like to share my own reminder, which is in a few weeks, my membership and subscription to Unknown Country needs to be renewed. And I wanted to encourage all of you listeners to subscribe to Whitley's channel. He is making such an enormous contribution here, sharing all of these incredible interviews and speakers with you. And the Library for Unknown Country has such depth of information and knowledge. If you are not a signed up member, I encourage you to do today and support Whitley in his wonderful work. Thank you for joining us. Today we have the distinct honor of welcoming Paula Horn-Mullen to our show. Hello, Paula. Welcome to New Observations.
Hi. Good day. My name now, actually, is Paula Looking Horse, because I and Orville have been married for a while now, but I use Horn-Mullen because I've been known, you know, for so long by that, and people don't know that I changed my name, so I use both names at times. So thank you for the introduction.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you here, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you and Chief Orville again for coming to the conference in WASTA almost a month ago now. It's so hard to believe how fast time travels. As speakers, your presence was an amazing addition to our event, and everyone took so much information and energy away from the two of you. Thank you again. It was just amazing for us to have you join us.
Oh, thank you for having us. It was really a pleasure meeting everybody from all over, which I was surprised.
Yeah, even as far away as Hawaii. It was quite amazing with the virus. We're all troopers.
Yeah, it was nice to meet everybody, and everybody was so pleasant and nice. We really enjoyed ourselves. Getting out and going for a ride across South Dakota was a pleasure as well.
That's great. Well, you and Chief Orville had just returned from a trip. Isn't that right? For
yes.
Peace
yes,
and prayer, world peace and prayer. Tell us about that.
Well, we worked really hard for World Peace and Prayer Day for 25 years now. And of course, this year was supposed to be in Quebec. And with this virus that happened, you know, we didn't even realize it was 25 years. I had stated it was 24. I had to correct that. But, at the last minute, I said, what are we going to do? You know, and everybody was doing Zoom and in these podcasts. So we contacted Smoke Signals, Indigenous Smoke Signals, that's with Myron Dewey. We asked for help. And so Orville said, well, are we going to do it from here home or what? And then he said, I'd like to return to the first place that we had World Peace and Prayer Day, which was Bear Lodge, known as Devil's Tower. And for years, we've been trying to change the name because ever since that time in 1996, because of the issue that it mistakenly got named Devil's Tower, because the guy that was sending letters to the colonel or whatever, he said it's a place where the savages have their church. They called their church or a place of worship. That's what it was. And so, and it's a tower. So the colonel documented it as Devil's Tower. And in actuality, all the people that were communicating around with the tribes, they all knew it as Bear Lodge or their traditional name. So Devil's Tower stuck. So, you know, since 96, we've been campaigning to try to change it, and the tourism around there just said it cost too much money, and then the Rotary Department clubs came in and tried to assist in even giving money to help them change their logos or their signs or their internet. They would raise money to assist in the change, but they love the name Devil's Tower, and so we've had different support, and that's another whole topic, but I wanted to educate about that because he wanted to go back there because it was a place that the bundle was brought, the bundle that he takes care of. And if you go there, it'll up at the museum at the top, it has the story of Orville's journey there and what his feelings are as far as the bundle being brought there. So we went there, and Senator Driscoll with the KOA actually hosted us at the KOA, because that's where we stayed. And in back of the KOA, he has three teepees that tell the story of Bear Lodge. And apparently we didn't know that in 1996, the Park Service wouldn't oblige to have a gathering, but Senator Driscoll, a Republican, stepped in and allowed the people to cross into the federal park through there because he owns land on the other side, and they had a gathering. That's where the first gathering was. So because we were doing a major internet hosting, Zoom or different things, or satellite, he said that we can have a sacred fire in back of those three teepees in back of KOA. And it was beautiful. We set up our own teepee. It was below a hill right by a brook. And you just look across the creek, there is, you know, the tower. So we were right up against the federal park there, and the federal park gave us the permit, but they had so many stipulations, and we couldn't be around the fire, you know, as much, and somebody had to stay there, but it was only one vehicle could be by the fire. It wasn't so welcoming, and so we completed our mission, and we had all the people in the world where we've had, most of them, I should say, some of them didn't have access to internet, where we planted the seed of World Peace and Prayer Day, June 21st, since 1996. So we probably got maybe half of the 24 sites, which was, you know, New Zealand and South Africa, Japan. And right now we're uploading them because we had problems there with the Wi-Fi and the satellite connection, but we're uploading all the videos that they submitted to us, and they'll be on our website, aworldpeaceandprayer.com.
Oh, that's fantastic. So everyone will get to see the different ceremonies that took place around the globe.
Right, and they just contributed and told the history, and because some people are gone now, they were elders. They talked about them and gave them recognition, and talked about the environmental impacts that are still going on in different territories that they prayed about. And, of course, the protection of sacred sites.
The white buffalo calf woman first appeared at Bear Lodge. Is that correct?
North of there, apparently. Somewhere north of there. It was always told that it was around that territory, yes.
Mm-hmm. Could you share a little bit about the appearance of the white buffalo calf woman and the giving of the pipe to the Lakota people?
Sure. Just a brief history of it is that there came a time where the people, the buffalo all disappeared, and of course that was the people's subsistence to survive, you know, for warmth, their teepees, everything we use for the buffalo, you know, the rib cage for sleds, the, clothing, the teachings that the buffalo, they help each other when one is hurt. They, everything we learn from the buffalo. And so what happened is they disappeared and they start starving. And so during that time, these two, strong warriors or hunters went out one more time looking, and from a distance, and a cloud came, and she came out of the cloud, and it was a beautiful woman, and in white buckskin, and she came to approach them, and one of them had bad thoughts, thinking, I'd like to take her for my wife. And the other one knew that she was a sacred being, so he humbled himself to the ground and knelt down, and the other one stood up, and she read his mind, and she asked him to approach her. And so he went towards her, and when he got close, that cloud came down and enveloped him. And when it lifted, he was bones. So he went straight on to the spirit world. And they say there was the other warrior was humbled, and she told him to go back to his people, and she was going to be coming with a gift. And she said, tell them what you've seen, but don't make more of what it is, and don't make less of what it is. And that's probably the first teaching of truth. And so he went back, and he was told to prepare specifically, a tripod and a teepee, and how she said. And she came in a zigzag down the hill. And they always say the zigzag portrays, the energy, that depicting energy, how it is. And so she came with a bundle, and it was the gift of a pipe. And with that pipe were seven values and seven sacred ceremonies for our people to survive in the future and to survive. And she told him how to take care of the pipe, and only the good should see the pipe and the bad should leave it alone. And all the values and virtues of humanity to survive was pretty much in those seven sacred values. And then the seven sacred rites were the ceremonies that we participate in that bring boundaries to our people of how we can attain and follow a path of endurance to live a good life. And then she returned. And then when she returned, she left zigzag again. And then when she reached the top of the hill, she knelt down and rolled over and became a black, and again a red. And then the last time, she was a white small buffalo calf and ran over the hills, so her Indian name became White Buffalo Calf Woman.
Such a beautiful story. Absolutely inspiring, and bringing in all the four-legged, the significance of the buffalo to the people, but also the connection between man and animals, which it seems like in the past 20 to 25 years, humanity is really discovering in a new way, almost for the first time, the extent of what animals do for us on all levels. Is there a particular time of year that the pipe is brought out?
It usually is. Orville decides, and I think it's usually around Sundance time, he has brought it out, but he put it away for 4 years now. It's probably in its second year, two more years. And the reason why he put it away is because there's so much confusion and exploitation of ceremonies now. Our people have, a lot of our people have contracted the disease of the mind, so to speak, that society, you know, has imposed on them, and they started trying to use our ceremonial way of life to make money or to, you know, when they don't have a right to do certain things, and they gave themselves rights, and they, you know, they fool people. And so he kind of had enough of complaints of people that got hurt, and he put it away to help people to think about the importance of this gift that is given to us, to try to attempt to pray and bring things back to order.
Which is exactly what we need right now, as the chaos seems to be building on an almost daily basis.
Right.
Paula, tell us about the amazing project you have planned.
Well, just to let you know how this came to be, really, is, you know, growing up on a reservation in my time, I'm, you know, 64 this year, and we grew up in an era where our parents are boarding school parents, and a lot of our ways were outlawed, and it wasn't until like 1978 the freedom of religion happened, and that's my era of becoming a teenager. And so a lot of the traditional way of life was pretty much outlawed, and our parents were forced to colonialize, and, you know, there was, you know, efforts by the government to snuff out, you know, who we are as a people. And so during my time in the 70s, there was an awakening, because so much of our land was stolen and taken, and our teachings as well, that were, you know, forgotten or in secret, because you couldn't even have ceremony. A lot of our medicine men were in prison. There's a place in south of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, called Canton, South Dakota, where they had an institution. And so a lot of the medicine people, psychologists, had guidelines, do you see things, you know, and if they said yeah, they wouldn't lie, and they would take them and pretty much imprison them, and they start doing tests on them. And so a lot of our medicine people were imprisoned there, and they used them kind of like guinea pigs to take their brains, you know, after they killed them. And so there's a whole golf course down in Canton. Actually, Orville helped release their spirits probably about 5 years ago. He released all of them, and they came from different tribes as well. It was kind of a prison ward for medicine people. But they were, we were surprised, because some of those spirits were young children. So I don't know, I guess some children had gifts back then. I don't know why they would be in there, but those were the spirits he released as well. But in any case, so they beat the Indian out of us. I don't even like the Indian. They beat our way of life out of us. So in the 70s, it was an awakening. And at first, you know, I joined the American Indian Movement. And I was kind of a rebel even joining that, because I would say, well, we're not even American, and we're not even really Indian, you know, how come we're naming our organization after America, what was this, America Vespucci, and you know, Columbus,
right,
was looking for India, and we're Indian. And so some of the later were kind of irritated with me, but I was kind of like, you know, it was a, that's when I started going to Red Schoolhouse. It was the first Native control school in the whole continent, probably, you know, teaching how to, you know, our accurate history, because the history books that I grew up with were so untruthful, and also it taught racism. And I remember going to school in Bronze Valley, Minnesota, and I was, my grandmother wouldn't let me go to a boarding school, and I was one of the few Native kids that went to this all-white public school, and you know, we were great all the way through school until we reached sixth grade in history books, and then all of a sudden I was a savage, and all of a sudden, you know, all this inaccurate, terrible heathen stories were in these old history books. I don't know if anybody has any of those old history books, but they've changed a lot of them and taken them out of circulation. But they were terrible. It taught kids how to be racist. And everybody changed towards me except one blonde-haired, blue-eyed friend of mine that refused to conform to, you know, history books. And, you know, she kind of protected me. And we became an example of going above and beyond, but it didn't stop the racism. But I left early on because it was got so bad, and then I went to Red Schoolhouse, and that was American Indian Movement organized school that was taught with Eddie Benton Benet, who's Anishinaabe, Ojibwe, and we had teachers from all over come in, and Philip Deer from Oklahoma, and you know, just different people that elders became our teachers. And then the University of Minnesota students came in and crammed us with all the reading, writing, arithmetic, through the yard, so to speak, so we could pass the St. Paul Public School curriculum guidelines. And there was four of us, and I was one of the four, and we actually accredited, you know, Red Schoolhouse, so it could be another school that our people could go to, but learn our real history and culture, and our entertainment was, even through the weekend, we would go and feed and sing and dance and learn how to, you know, songs and make outfits, and it was, and the older us, you know, teenagers, we would teach the young ones with the students, with the teachers that they had. So we had a responsibility to go one-on-one with the young students that came in, you know, K-5, you know, to teach them to read and write. That was our way of giving back. And so it was almost our second home, and a lot, I think it was our home, actually. And so I became, 1976, I became a graduate, and I always remember us four students, we sat down and we said, what are we going to do now? And, of course, we wished for colleges, Native colleges, which exists today, but it was different because the Native colleges today are kind of mimics of the universities to get accreditation, but it was an idea of teaching and being an institute of designing our own education. And so we got our wish of Native colleges owned by different tribes, but I remember saying, you know, wouldn't it be neat if we learn plants and learned about culture and have immersion, like everybody speaks the language, and it kind of immersed back into what the boarding school did to our parents, was, you know, beat the Indian out of them, or the Dakota out of my mother's and our mothers and fathers, but to be opposite, to embrace back into education of who we are as a people and our culture in learning those seven sacred rights, learning the proper way of earning who we are as a people. And so anyway, that was kind of thrown around. We were just visiting because we're new graduates. And so throughout time and after I start working with Orville with World Peace and Prayer Day, actually before I start working with him, I had a dream to give thanks back to the sacred stone, which is pipestone. And so by the moccasin telegraph without internet, and of course AT&T was a dollar a minute, you couldn't afford, 300 people showed up. And so we did a thank you in Pipestone, Minnesota for all the stone that was getting taken, you know, for tourism. And then we had a ceremony, and in the ceremony it said the blood of our people is not for sale. And so the young people, myself, I organized a run through all the reservations to bring attention that the people should protect the sacred stone. So I think that's why Orville sought me out, because I was bringing attention to a sacred site. And so the first World Peace and Prayer Day in 96, he asked for my help, and I and my family, my son mostly, my first son, went and visited the tribes where Bear Lodge was important, because that's the first World Peace and Prayer, World Peace and Prayer Day in 1996, to the Crow, the Arapaho, the Cheyenne. We had to give an offering to go and pray there as proper protocol. So we completed that for him. And then later on, the third year we had World Peace and Prayer Day in Pipestone, and then he just wanted to work with me more. And then, of course, after that, you know, we worked very close, and throughout the years of traveling the four directions to Ireland, after we went on Turtle Island here for 4 or 5 years, we went to Ireland, South Africa, Australia, Japan, and then we had a thank you here, and we kept going, you know, New Zealand. So 24 years passed. So, but during like the third year in helping him with Pipestone, I had a dream again, and it was of a building like a medicine wheel. And so I got up in the middle of the night, and I start typing on, I just learned computer. I was kind of self-taught by my friend that was a webmaster for Wolokota.org, our first webmaster, Elaine Martinez, and she taught me how to use computer over the phone. And so I start typing, and it was, what if we built something like we talked about in 1976. And it was like the first draft, I think I don't know if I sent it to you, but it was the first draft of the West Direction. We would teach about sustainable development, you know, how to survive with wind energy and solar energy and growing food, you know, going back to the future, I guess. And then
right.
the North would be, you know, tapping into our right brain, because there's a balance between our left and right brain, and our right brain appreciates color and design, which is all the visual of Mother Earth, you know, that tribes throughout the world design their own cultural attire after how they viewed their mother, which is the earth, and the colors they use. You know, woodland used a lot of, you know, flowers, and, you know, the plains used a lot of the sun because that was predominant. And, you know, you go to those that live near the ocean, it was, you know, praising the animals, the whale, and, you know, the different designs, and, you know, throughout the world, you know, and in Africa and in Ireland, that's what we learned actually when we went to the different countries, the cultural people of their design. So they're very right brain, appreciating the earth, And so what we would do is with the North is to teach that tap to help the right brain get stronger and create media, our own, what I don't know if anybody knows about Aboriginal People's Television Network, but APTN, they are really advanced because the government in Canada really gives a lot of money towards First Nations people. So they have an extraordinary television network of, you know, showing different cultures in Canada to their own, you know, modeling to their own soapbox movies to major films and, you know, and so I thought, you know, rather than reinventing it, how come we can't have a station down here that taps into it? We are one people.
Right, absolutely.
So I thought we would find a way to tap into bringing, advocating, tapping in and enhancing and sharing our culture with Canada, which is relatives, and they've already done all the legwork where it could be shown down here, but creating our own and radio station we would create, and then our own museum, and then our own art department, from traditional to fine art, you know, tanning hides to sculpting, you know, throwing clay, painting, whatever. And then to the east is knowledge. So it would be getting up to par with reading, writing, arithmetic, the whole computer department. And if anybody wants to go through, and because what happens is a lot of these schools, tribal schools or public schools, they just pass kids through and then they say, go away, here's some scholarships and go to this university and that university and then take out this loan and here's your FAFSA, and they are not up to par with other non-tribal schools and they flunk out. They don't get the support. So then they come home in debt from loans. And they end up, you know, trying to survive and push back on the reservation, not having a chance. So this East department would be instructors to bring them up to par, to help them to revisit the public school education or advance them, you know, to other types of education. Maybe they want to be a doctor, a nurse, or a lawyer, you know, like training them on the job training to bring them up to par, what they've got to bring their skills up to be able to go on to a major university so that they could keep up and, you know, assist themselves. And then with that, you know, the two floors, it would be two floors. I had actually designed a medicine wheel building, and I showed it to my tribe, and they made our tribal office without the second floor. I was so upset, but they're my tribe. I can't sue them. But I was like, oh, this is what it would have looked like, you know, huge rotunda, you know, but you guys took it for me. And of course, anyway, but the bottom floor would have been, I was trained, and I know this sounds weird, but I was trained in Montessori when I was young. I worked in Seneca Nation in Allegheny, New York, and I really liked that type of training. Maybe there's a better one, but it was what I was trained in, and I really liked it, that kids played with something, and then when they were done, they put it back. Just that training with young children, I think today it's almost a reflection of their life when they just don't put it back. They just throw it out there and don't, you know, not be responsible.
Right, absolutely.
And so I just thought, I'm going to design this because if kids came, I shouldn't say kids, but young adults came with children, you know, that they would be able to, while they're in school, you know, they could bring their children here and they would be taught the language. Then the south direction is where it would start from. And the south direction would be administration, of course, and physical ed, swimming pool, weights, counseling. And in order to get into school, you have to come through the south. It would be 100 kids. And I've always, I know this sounds weird and it might not even turn out that way, but I read this thing about the 100 monkey theory.
Yeah.
And I thought, I would start out with 100 kids, you know, and because that monkey theory where they had the coconuts and, you know, it was radiation and then they wash the coconuts and eat the inside. First it was one, it was two, and then by the time it reached 10, it just, like, the whole island, as soon as it reached 100, it was like almost automatic education with all the monkeys. It just spread like nothing. So I thought, well, I'm going to do that, you know, and I'm going to make it 100 and, you know, 50 male and 50 female. And so they would have to come in with application, and it would be an application questionnaire of being really serious. And, you know, it isn't like any other institution where you messed up and you go to the guidance counselor and you know, all that stuff. So my grandchildren are trying to buzz in here. Excuse me. So it would be more of you have to be able to, oh my goodness. Are you still there, ma'am?
I am, yes. Is everything okay?
And you know what? Yes, it's my grandchildren. I, you know, when you got grandchildren, they're like persistent, and they're just like, I'm declining, and they're like redialing. Apologies. So,
oh, no problem.
So what I wanted to say is, when they would have to apply, and they would have to prove that they were going to follow the rules and be alcohol and drug free, and they would have to create an awareness that they really had to be able to how do I say this, I didn't feel that it was appropriate to you know what? I'm really getting distracted by my grandchildren.
Well, how about if you tell them that you're on a call, doing an interview?
The next one, I'm going to text them. I'm going to say I'm on a conference call. Okay, I am on a conference call. I am on a business call. Stop. There.
You're doing an important interview.
Yeah. And it's probably my grandson that doesn't know how to read, right?
Oh, so, dear.
He's only four, so.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, he gets a hold of the phone and he FaceTimes me and says, what are you doing? So I'm doing this for you, I should say.
Exactly. And it just shows, Paula, the importance of family in the Dakota, Nakota, Lakota tradition. Children are the most.
You know what? It's like that in many families. You know, it doesn't matter because there are families, all our families of the colors of the two-legged. They're important in some us as parents. You know, and
oh,
so
absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's what this school would teach, is the importance
exactly.
of being a mother and a father, you know, because that was a part of coming of age and one of our seven sacred rights, that is they, you know, teach them how, you know, that gift of bringing life, whether it's a male or female, you know, what is your responsibility to this gift that you're going to have to create life? That's what coming of age is about. And so, and that would be the questionnaire in the South Direction. It would be, you know, what is the, what is important to you? And questions like, if you have a problem with somebody, you know, you're going to be going to school with, how are you going to resolve that?
Mm-hmm.
You're aware that there is no room for hatred. There's no room for lying or jealousy. You know, all those things you have to commit to being alcohol and drug free. You cannot cuss here. Are you, you know, you can't use those words that inflict and bring in negative energy. So all of those are going to be education just to apply. And so when they come in, they are schooled to be able to bring about that awareness of I need to be a good person. And so when they apply, you know, there'll be questions about their personal life, and there'll be a counselor, and there'll be an intake, because what we want are success stories. And yes, there's going to be problems, and if there is problems, they have to go to a counselor. And, you know, and part of that counseling is knowing that ceremonial intervention to assist in whatever problems or that they've been through in life. So that South Direction, that first direction, before we build that building, we will start with the Healing with Horses. So that program will be already in place. And that's our first step towards creating White Buffalo Institute Tatanka Scott. Is, you know, Orville for years, you know, 36 years, I don't know how long, he's been leading the Bigfoot ride and the Mankato 38 ride, then the water and MMIW ride and walk. This is his last year, this coming year. And now he wants to, we're building over by a place called Sheecha Hollow. And Sheecha Hollow it's also a horse canyon, and it's just full of medicines and trail rides and plants, and it's thick, and it's a state park, but it used to be actually owned by one of my uncles and grandpas, and the state took it away because it's so beautiful, but we have access to it for our ceremonial stuff, and my land is not far from there. And so what we want to do is create not just from point A to point B during the Bigfoot ride or Mankato ride, but working, he wants to stay home and he wants to work with horses. He wants to build, you know, get fencing and a barn and get help to, because one of the things that he experienced on the Bigfoot ride is these kids, when they get attached to horses, you know, there's not much going on the reservation. And so they look forward to training their horse or being around horses so that they can go from this endurance ride of, you know, in below zero weather and go from point A to point B. But the only problem after all these years is the lack of supervision that has come about because it's gotten so big. And when you have kids that don't have access to Christmas or there's a chip on their shoulder or even problems with alcohol or drugs in their community, and they get on these rides and they end up on these rides, and then they bring that energy with them, and they've got a chip on their shoulder where not even elders can correct them, and that's what we're seeing. And so the good part that we've created the last 4 years is the MMIW and a water walk. We had a water walk with the from Sisseton here to Mankato. Is that we mandated that there is no records of pedophilia of people that can come on the ride, because we have children that check out of school during that time and walk with us, or some of them will ride with us, and we pray for the water and the murdered and missing. So that's been a real blessing for us these last 4 years, because we had more control. So now Orville is getting up in age, and he wants to take this opportunity to finish now, and I'm sure he'll still help with his horses on if kids want to borrow his horses and stuff. But he wants to focus more on year-round, bringing children out and just spending time with horses, taking people with knowledge on these horse rides to the Horse Canyon and Sheetah Hollow, where it stick with medicines and herbs, and teach them. I always tried to do that, actually, when I was a student at Red Schoolhouse, because, you know, the elders start showing us different medicines, and I said, we should get one of those, back then, you know, we should get one of those photo albums with the plastic and the wax, you know, how they put old photos.
Right.
And get a notebook, and we'll go with the elders, and then we'll offer tobacco for the leaf, and we'll press it down, and then we'll write in there what it's for, and so we'll always have our own knowledge book, you know, and, you know, that's, it never materialized, because we, back then, we couldn't come up with the money for all the photo albums, but, you know, we were a pretty poor school, but we always had food, and so anyway, I thought, well, now everybody's got iPhones, you know, they could take a picture, and then
right.
record it and write down. And, you know,
but what an
know.
Amazing activity for all of your 100 students to make their own knowledge book as part
right.
of their experience. That would be extraordinary.
But that's what the Shukawakan project that I sent you, that's the first step before we make the school, is to create that relationship with horses, because they are healers. And so it'd be our first school, you know, and then of course in the future, because to build that school that I described to you is a lot of funding, and longevity, and I worked on it with Bob Goff, who was a lawyer, and Pat Spears, who was a tribal chairman for, Low Brule. He was chairman, and or maybe it was Fort Thompson, but he was a chairman, and he was an educator, and he was very respected. And of course, Elaine Martinez, who was our webmaster. They loved the idea of what became Wool Lakota, and then it became White Buffalo. But we worked and worked and worked on it, and then they, you know. Slowly we slipped away, and then it was, I just kind of put it on a back burner, because Orville keeps me busy with World Peace and Prayer Day and these rides and coming of age and, you know, all these other programs that we've had. And it's just time. I'm tired out of this with the rides, and, you know, World Peace and Prayer Day has a life of its own. It isn't that hard for me anymore. People help more than I can you imagine on a grassroots level of dial-up internet, trying to organize in Ireland, you know, and just believing that, you know, the spirit's going to lead you. But I pulled out many hair trying to make it work, you know, trying to figure out how we're going to get our elders there and teach and be with the Irish people and each accomplishment is such a relief, but the process to get there, to plant that seed, is always a stressful financial burden. And so now it's kind of like it's got a wind of its own now, and maybe one day we could build a school. But I think for now, we know that the first phase has got to be the self-direction with the healing with horses, because that's when and if the school does get built, the horse project will be the one that's going to start it with realizing what we can accomplish on the grassroots level with of education with the plants. And then so when we go into this school, you know, there'll be language immersion. And what I had an idea about, we went to Chiapas in Mexico, and we were given these earphones like the UN does, and
for translation.
Yeah, and I realized I was listening to, it wasn't Hispanic, it was their language in Chiapas. And after like the third day, I start catching on to their language as it simultaneously interpreted it. And even in the different languages that were there, but it was predominant down there, you know, I was like, because there was a lot of speakers conveying to us about their sacred sites and concerns. And I thought, man, that's a good idea. And it, because
it's a great idea,
you know, and so it was like these teachers, if they're teaching about sustainable development or any of those curriculums, I mean, they don't know the language and they're not fluent, but we can hire fluent language speakers in little modules, you know, in female and male, listening to the teacher and then interpreting through the earphone in your ear and what the teacher is saying. And so it's kind of imposed on them to learn the language, and there'll be times and periods where they can't speak English. The first thing that they'll learn would be sign language, which was prevalent in the Americas, you know, amongst the different tribes. So that would be the first teaching, would be sign language. And so the hope is like in 1 year that they would come out of there. And so it's not just for Lakota, Dakota, Nakota. One of the things I was asked, and I said, well, if the Cheyenne or the Ojibwe wanted to learn from the school, they could help us write a grant or support to get a female and male speaker in to follow around that their students in there. And so like if a Cheyenne students wanted to come and learn all what we teach, then they would bring in a Cheyenne female and male. And if an Irish person wanted to learn, you know, what we're doing to take it back where they're from, or, you know, any of the languages, they would bring in an interpreter so that we would stress. Or if that's all they knew was another language from another country, let's say from Chiapas, and they just learned Chiapas, and they would come in and they would tell them what they were saying in English, you know, so that they would learn English. So, you know, there's different ways that I felt that language has to be, because that's the first cultural teaching in any of the world, is the word is sacred. And so that sound would be imposed on them again to learn who they are as a people and their responsibility to their umbilical cord, you know, back through their ancestral ties to the beginning of when ancestors still respected Mother Earth.
It's so important. And to communicate with the horses first will also open up the intuitive capabilities and gifts that each child has, which will then be useful in every other area of their life. I know that the Bigfoot ride stresses the oneness of rider and horse. To make the extraordinary trip in such harsh weather conditions over such a long distance for 2 weeks, that a very specific type of bond and strength is formed. So it makes total sense that you would use that as a as your first building block for what you're doing.
Thank you.
And your vision is absolutely beautiful. When I read all your materials, I absolutely saw it coming to fruition. And I love your second floor to the building. I think it represents bringing in the higher realms of thought and spirituality into all the four corners. And, you know, just to let you know, I am committed to helping you in whatever way I can to realize this dream, because I feel it's extremely important.
Well, thank you for seeing the importance of I feel right now we are our own people, everybody, have become detached from the earth of the responsibility of a gift that's given as a teaching ground. This is only a teaching ground. So even part of that is accepting that when our teachings are over, so that it doesn't get snuffed out before we learn anything, that we earn that right to go on, because we do live on. And I think that fear-based religion or fear-based mentality of living life has been so much misinformed that, you know, the majority of the two-legged have taken advantage of the gifts that have been given here on earth. And if they could just come back to some kind of sanity with harmony of appreciating life, of appreciating the earning of living on, then it would be an attribute that this school can offer. And I just one more thing. I remember we were invited to Quebec to this group of medicine people, clan mothers, elders, that were invited to meet the Kogi by these French expeditioners had hosted this meeting when the Kogi first allowed that they existed, and they were worried about their sacred lake up in down in Colombia that was now being polluted by the air, and they were wondering what was going on, because they detached themselves from even being known they existed, and they finally showed themselves to the French. And so they brought three of them to meet us, and they wanted to know what we were doing as relatives. They called us the younger brothers, what we were doing to help save, you know, Mother Earth, because it's so important to them. They live off the land. And they were kind of disappointed. We're sitting there with chairs and using utensils and modern civilized clothes, you know, and I'm sure they were pretty, sad about it. Third day they left, and there was a man there named Michael Scallion, who was on a retreat. He was on a worldwide tour. He was a world-known psychic, I guess. And he asked to do a circle, since we were just kind of milling around, since they went in the woods, the three Kogi. They had to take a break from us. And so we took a break that afternoon into the night, and he asked the French people that hosted it if they could do a circle. And everybody was like, well, you know, nothing else to do, entertainment, and he's a psychic. And he had everybody crying. He started to the left of me, and he went around the room, and he was like, I see a bear, I see an eagle, I see this person with this design, you know, this colors. And they were, like, convinced that he had a gift. And then they got to Orvo, and he's the only one. They couldn't see nothing. And he said, whatever you have, it's not letting me see. It's very strong, and I'm going to respect that boundary. And all I see is something on your back. it's huge that you're carrying, and you need to find somebody to help you carry it. And that was it. And then it got to me. I was the last one. And he said, he wouldn't say anything. And I felt my face getting so warm because I was so embarrassed. Everybody was staring at me. Everybody had all these, you know, extravagant of a bear and an eagle. And I was like, oh, I love the eagle. And my grandma's here. And he didn't say anything. And I was like, oh, great. You know, well, maybe he's like horrible. There's a boundary. He can't see me. And so then he opened his eyes. He said, I know what it is. He said, it's a medicine wheel. I see a building. I see planes, trains, cars coming, and they're taking a seed from all over the world, and they're taking it, and they're creating their own. And he opens his eyes, and he said, you need to build that. And I was like, I don't even know this guy, you know, and I didn't.
That's amazing.
It was just on my computer, you know, I don't know this dude. And then I was the only one of everybody. He was looking at my feet all the way up to behind, you know, up in the air. And he said, there's a redwood that's shooting up and you're being covered with vines and flowers. And it was the earth, you know, it was, you know, he said, you're being wrapped in all this foliage. And he said, you know, it's to save life, he said. And I was like, wow. And I thought, I barely remember to water my plants. But anyway,
you're too busy to water your plants, Paula.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, my garden's, you know, overgrown, and, you know, I don't weed, and, you know, I was like, wow, okay, well, thanks for loving me, you know. And so anyway, then I knew, and then I wrote to him, like, that was like about, I don't know, 18 years ago, 19 years ago, and I wrote to him, like, 10 years ago, and he never answered me. I said, you had a vision of me building this school, and I don't even know how to do that. I don't even know what to do. I don't have the money for that. That's crazy. Can you tell me and at least guide me to what I need to do? And he never answered me. So I don't even, well, he must be alive. His name is Michael Scallion, and he's probably a really old man now. You know, that's 20 years ago. I think he's alive anyway. But anyway, he never answered me. So,
well, it's so interesting because the No, I see it. I absolutely see it happening. But it's interesting because someone on the New Observations podcast posted the link of a film called Aluna, which is about the Kogi, just a couple days ago.
Really?
It's a movie. Yes, it's a movie that you can watch on YouTube. And I watched it a couple of days ago when he posted it. And it's an amazing film of the Kogi traveling to London and other places, but also standing up to land developers in Colombia and in discussion with geologists and earth biologists, and basically the things that they're saying about particular areas, what they see, what they're getting, messages they're getting intuitively, are consistent with geological research on particular areas and what is happening, you know, as a river gets blocked up from pollution or construction, that all of the rivers are supposed to flow to the ocean and the seas. And it's just this absolutely beautiful synthesis of information that we all carry in us on a, you know, on a spiritual level. All this information is within reach, within each and every one of us, just the way, you know, the blood flows through our veins to every area of our bodies, through our heart. It's mirrored, in the earth, our mother. And it's just a very, very beautiful film of where ley lines, for instance, are being blocked. But they had a gold thread made that they unraveled, you know, all over the globe to reconnect the flow of the energy lines.
Wow.
That's what you're doing. That's what Orville is doing. You know, that's what our Conference on Consciousness is doing. We're all doing our work in various places around the globe to help support the Earth.
Right. Well, we have no choice, and I don't know what's going to happen, but something's got to happen soon, you know.
Yeah, this is the critical moment right now. We're in it.
Yeah. Yep. It sure is.
Well, I have faith. I think people are waking up, and I think people are becoming activated, which then motivates them to make a stand. And that's the most important thing right now.
Yes. It is.
So, Paula, how can our audience support your projects, your multiple projects that you have going, your school, your amazing White Buffalo Institute, as well as World Peace and Prayer, and your foundation, Horse Project?
Well, right now we just, I had a meeting actually with one of our friends that helped with World Peace and Prayer Day we met him in Ireland, and he's been with us. He's from Australia. He's an Aussie. He's Irish background, and his name is Gerard Williams. And Gerard has been working with a man named Chris Ledoux. And Chris Ledoux is a brainiac. He's a genius, and he's making actually a solar device that it's about as big as a coffee table, and it's kind of, it reminds me of a, you know, those DNA, how that looks, how it's spiral. Well, it's got a flat surface, and it spirals, and it's got little tiny solar energy devices on it. It looks like a beaded solar energy panel, and it spins, and it's equivalent to, I think he said, it's equivalent to like 50 huge solar energy panels, but it's as big as a coffee table. And he's now, he patented it, and Stanford University has been helping them. They've got to, in order for it to go out on the market, you know, they have to have, you know, their grassroots geniuses, so to speak. They have to get the funding to patent it, which they've done. And his dream is that he's going to get this going, and it's going to be part of the school and the institute, and the kids can learn about it in the West direction of sustainable development, and create it as a part-time to teach them how to make it and assemble it and to fund the school. And, you know, that's just Chris's dream. I don't know if that'll ever materialize. But that, so Chris is significant, Chris Ledoux, because he started something called Carl Ledoux Foundation. And Carl was his only child, and he was killed in Asheville, Oregon. He had problems. I think he inherited from his father being like a genius, and he couldn't shut off his mind. You know, I wish I had that gift, though. But he was like super intelligent, and he got depressed from it because he was on medication. He didn't like the medication. you know, because it slowed down his mind, and then
right.
he got caught up in the drugs, you know, and experiencing, this was like about 30 years ago, and he was crossing the street like a block away from his home, and the police just shot him, and he was like hollering and just shot him. They didn't try to, you know, like, I didn't know if they had those zapping things yet or what, but he was just flailing his arms, and it was unnecessary. I think he took him to court, and I think he won. I'm not positive, but it was unnecessary because, you know, he was documented. He was having problems, but he was so devastated, him and his wife. And so he said, you know, I want to help you create this for our young people. He's part Cherokee, and he said, I want to, you know, do this. So he made this foundation, and he had other, before he met us, he made that Carladue to donate to different causes for young people. And then he let it go. And then when he met us, and he just loved Orville and his work. And so he said, this next one, I'm going to activate this nonprofit, and we're going to name it. Well, at that time, it was, when he met us, it was Wo Dakota, you know, Carladue. And but now we just chose our board, and it has a legitimate nonprofit number, and we haven't, you know, we've always, after the Wolakota.org phased out, we've always been under Nez Spirit Foundation. But those have been for our ride and our coming of age, and we just started a canoe journey. We're, you know, getting canoes to, you know, because not everybody runs, walks, or rides horse. You know, we wanted to create some for kids, you know, and so canoe journey. Where I live, there's a lot of water, you know, and so we were known as canoe people. So Spirit Foundation helps us with that. But with this school, and it's with Healing with Horses, we are going to start out where I'm going to be on a board. It's usually an umbrella that oversees our work, which I really like, you know, because I get all this help from the board. But now we're going to take on this task of overseeing it, and I feel it's really important to get a solid board to oversee this vision, because you know, those are like projects. This is a vision. And so now it's activated. We have our nonprofit number, and now we've got to get funds to make a website and talk about the school and the Healing with Horses. And all of it is now being formalized so we can legitimately walk forward to fundraising towards the Healing with Horses first. And hopefully one day somebody will give us something major to build the institute, the White Buffalo Institute. And before I leave this earth, I'm hoping it happens anyway.
Like, I think it will. I definitely think it will. So if people want to support you and get involved in some way, the best thing for them to do at this moment is to contact you directly at your Gmail account, I would think.
Yes, and then by then, hopefully, I could, and like I said, we're just starting to fundraise, and
that's great.
Know, towards, so we're like opening a bank account. I told him one of the board members, I would donate the 100, and we would open it, and we have our nonprofit now, and it does have, you know, some history to it. We just has been dormant for a while, and so we could move forward with it. But like I said, it's just now activating, and maybe in the future I could get back with you you know, what the website is? Wouldn't that be grand if we could?
Oh, absolutely. Well, so I also, I was just about to add, you know, our website for the Thunderheart Center for the Arts, I actually bartered with a wonderful web designer who designed our website. I had skills that they needed, and they had, you know, the skills in terms of building a website. So that worked out really well. And what I found, and fundraising is part of my background, among other things, I created Art Walk New York, which raises approximately $1 million a year for Coalition for the Homeless. But if you put it out there, the universe has a wonderful way of bringing it back to you. So you're putting it out there right now, here and now. And I do see this as being successful and coming together. So
what pretty
it's a
huge
wonderful
it's
project.
It's kind of like it to me. It's so huge, and when I first I and Bob Goff and Pat and Elaine were creating this. As we kept coming up with numbers, and they said, "What do you see in there? What do you see? What do you see?" And they would tap my brain, and it was all the way down to the cooking stove and their bed and, you know, their desk. And I mean, you know, I was like up for days, you know, saying it would cost this much and that much. And then I just, one day after everything, and especially when they passed away, I really got sad. And I just thought, you know, I don't know what that Michael Scallion is. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe my kids will do this, you know. And so meeting you and all those wonderful people that are like-minded like you and what you've created, it just creates an awareness that there's maybe possibility. And I when I travel through cities or even towns, and you look at, I look at buildings, you know, these, you know, you go downtown Minneapolis and they got these huge buildings or banks and, you know, and I think, gosh, look at these guys. They just put up this building, you know, and they have all these workers and they just design it and it's at their fingertips. And it's like, yeah, if it could only be like that for us, you know, and I just, even just for homes, for the homeless, I think, God, you know, just give one of those big buildings to the homeless, you know, solve it.
Right. The thing. We have the solutions for all of our problems. We just have to approach them in a new way with a new attitude. And as you said earlier, being thankful, gratitude is such an important piece of the equation. And I've had this dream of creating an artist in residency program for 20 years, and it was coming out here and inviting my partners Larry and Adelaide Fuss to the conference last year that we put the pieces together. Larry came out to WASTA and in a day bought all these buildings, not knowing what he was going to do with them. And then I showed up and wrote this little proposal, and here we are, you know, opening the artist in residency program. So
and maybe we could be in conjunction later, and you know, to
I definitely
continue,
yes,
you know,
I definitely see there's a huge connection, and last week I had an amazing conversation with a professor from Cornell University who comes out to Pine Ridge regularly. Our goal is also to have college students and graduate students come and do their artwork here, but also spend time on Pine Ridge. So to bring them here to this powerful place and then have them interact and do art projects with the young people specifically on Pine Ridge and go back and share their experience with others, you know, this is all part of expanding consciousness and awareness and energetically opening up, you know, new ley lines of possibilities all around the globe. So that's what we're doing.
Right. And so, you know, maybe, you know, in the future, you know, we will, it can be, I know one of the things that, Michael Scallion said, they'll take a piece of it and go back, but it has to be from, for me, Orville is important because that's the nucleus, and to take a part of that energy and then take it back and have a pod. So let's say in the future, like if it became successful, there would be like a building built on these different reservations, and they with a teacher, and then they would, you know, where whether it's in Ireland or, you know, Pine Ridge or Cheyenne's, and the kids would go there, and then they would learn about sustainable development, you know, through a huge screen and, you know, virtual, you know, and
right,
and having people like those graduates go on their reservation and create a mini school, and, you know, and to teach about, like, what, you know, what was Henry Red Cloud, you know, teach about solar energy, or
right,
teach about what Chris Ledoux is doing with this solar energy unit. You know, so it's for everybody, you know, to see what each other's doing, you know, and APTN would be worldwide. You know, they don't know that.
Right.
I'm probably posing on them, but, you know, I really feel that they've done a lot in their archives of creation. And, you know, I remember when I go up and check in a hotel and turn on APTN, they have their own newscast, and then they go to, you know, interviewing an elder way out in the bush and showing how they fish and, you know, bring in things, and, you know, how they cook back then, or in the Arctic, or, I mean, you know, all those things. Or they talk about the impact of the what's going on with the environment. So, I mean, all those teachings are there that APTN gives, but they don't even have ours. We have all these tribes down here that can add to that archive and, you know, that educational pool. And so I
absolutely
I like working together and not in competition, and
right,
enhancing each other. And so I'd like to one day, you know, maybe one day we'll have that type of communication in our schools, and, you know, we'll bring back the umbilical cords of many people.
Absolutely. That's what mankind, womankind, that's what humanity is crying out for at this moment in time, that connection that we're born with, that has not been severed, but is definitely clogged, and we need to open it up again.
Right.
Well, Paula, is there anything you'd like to add before we close?
I think we've covered a lot.
We have.
You know, I think, you know, in the future, worldpeaceandprayer.com will have a link to our new website. I've got to get a webmaster. I don't know if my friend will make us another one. She kind of did it volunteer. But, you know, we're going to move fast now because we had our first meeting, and hopefully we can get some funding first for Healing with Horses. And if you want to communicate with me, you could communicate at, you know what? I'm going to give you Arvel's email, because I have to give him one, and I get so much junk mail with my email. But for this, okay, this one, I think it should be one that has so much traffic. So his email is Arvel, A-R-V-O-L, L-H, so it's Arvol Looking Horse. So it's Arvol, A-R-V-O-L-L-H, at gmail.com.
Okay. And we'll post that.
Yeah.
We'll post that with your interview as well.
Right. And so I could check and communicate so I know that, you know, it's specifically for our work here with you.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, Paula, thank you so much. It's been such an honor to have you on the show. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to all that we're going to accomplish together. Two 64-year-old women. I turned 64 this year, too. So.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yep. Two peas in a pod.